You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. It's Monday, July 28th, and in the aftermath of the U.S. war against the Taliban in Afghanistan, there were great hopes that a byproduct of that would be cracking down on the poppy trade, potentially stifling the heroin that floods American cities. Today, though, poppies are reaching new highs. One former State Department official says not only was drug trafficking not a priority of the U.S., but that in many ways the trade has been protected for both Afghan President Hamid Karzai's foes, but friends as well. Joining us now is Thomas Schweik, the former State Department official. His story ran in the New York Times Magazine. Good morning, Mr. Ambassador.
Good morning.
Could you break down this problem for us? Whose responsibility is it really to attack the poppy problem?
Well, first and foremost, it's the sovereign government of Afghanistan. I mean, it's the poppy's grown in their country, and it's grown. There's much more poppy growing now than there was even 2 or 3 years ago. So you've first got to look to the government of Afghanistan to take a leadership role. Now, of course, the international community can help. I mean, we've got a lot of people, a lot of expertise, and a lot of programs and funding we've been able to provide there, but it requires Afghan leadership.
And essentially, the U.S. went into Afghanistan to dismantle the Taliban. The Taliban now, as many have noted, is really enjoying a bit of a resurgence, in some part fueled by the drug trade and their ability to raise money through the heroin trade.
That's right. That's right. The Taliban, in Taliban-controlled areas, they basically control the trade. They tax the farmers. They tax the labs. They charge fees for transporting the drug to different places, and they make a lot of money. Now, the United Nations estimates it's $100 million a year.
So let's go back to the time when you were part of the administration, and tell us about some of the disagreements among the various U.S. government agencies and the relationship to Hamid Karzai in trying to address this problem, which you say the U.S. decided really wasn't a priority.
Well, no one thought the drug trade was good in Afghanistan. The question was, should you defeat the Taliban first and then attack the drugs, or do you have to attack the drugs while you're attacking the Taliban? And the original policy that won out was to go after, well, sequencing is what they called it, go after the Taliban first and then the drugs. The problem with that approach was that the drugs were actually fueling the Taliban, and there was no way to defeat the Taliban without actually also going after the drugs. And there were some battles within the U.S. government that I document in the article about whether to sequence it or whether to go after them simultaneously.
I mean, part of the difficulty is that the heroin trade is such an enormous economic component of everything that goes on in Afghanistan. It's almost inseparable from any sort of notion of power in Afghanistan. How could the U.S. government attack it in a way that isn't sequencing and be comprehensive in any way?
Well, first of all, we waited too long. The trade was not that big 2 or 3 years ago. It's exploded over the past 2 or 3 years, and had it been attacked early on, it would have been much more manageable. But even now, at the end of the article, I talk about five things we need to do, and basically what we need to do to get rid of the heroin trade there now is, first of all, tell Karzai he'll lose our support unless he cracks down on the people in his government who are involved in the trade. That's the first thing, because you have to start at the top. But you have to hit it at every level also. Most of the opium farmers in Afghanistan are not poor. That's another myth that's dispelled in the article. In fact, poppy's grown in the wealthier parts of Afghanistan, not in the poorer parts of Afghanistan. So you start with an eradication program where you tell the farmers, switch back to wheat, which is in short supply, and that's what most of them used to be growing. Grow wheat, which we need in this country. Give them seed, give them fertilizer, even guarantee the price, which is very high right now. But then let them know if you don't do that, there will be an eradication program that goes in and knocks out the fields. That will deter the farmers from planting poppy. We've seen that in other parts of the world, and even in parts of northern Afghanistan where there is no poppy anymore, there were eradication programs that were quite successful. But then there also has to be development assistance that follows behind that. For those people that don't grow poppy, there need to be rewards. They need to see bridges and schools and roads going in. So it's a combination of incentives and disincentives that I outline in the article that I think would work very well.
I mean, what you talk about in the article is not just simply resistance, but actually actively the Pentagon, in the example where you give the attempts by the DEA to really go in and crack down on the poppy fields, were thwarted. I mean, not only were they not helped, but they weren't allowed to use various equipment. Or you have a general, a U.S. general, in there saying he essentially shut down anti-drug efforts. So, I mean, it was a purposeful, intentional act not to help in this effort to crack down on drugs in Afghanistan.
Yeah, there were a few examples of that that I outlined in the article. And these were people, they weren't people who were in favor of drugs. They were military people who thought the drug mission was sort of a nuisance and an unnecessary activity that interfered with their military operations. And in the article, I point out that turned out to be quite short-sighted because now, of course, the Taliban's getting a lot of its money from the drugs trade.
And I guess that's what's so confusing, Mr. Ambassador. On the one hand, if you don't have any money to fuel Taliban efforts, how do they continue to grow? And if they're getting that money from this drug trade, that it would seem like an in-tandem approach may be more effective, but perhaps that's just naive.
Well, no, I don't think you're naive at all, Adora. I think that's exactly what should be happening, and that's what the article says. But unfortunately, it took a long time for people to come to that realization. Now we've got a much, much bigger problem than we used to have.
Okay, Thomas Schweik, very, very nice to have you this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thomas Schweik is a Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs. And boy, he has interesting insight there.
Yeah, it's interesting to know if Hamid Karzai would actually support the steps that he outlined there so clearly.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.